Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on People's Internet Radio, www.peoplesinternetradio.com, Seeking Solutions. That was the Eagles of Death Metal, apparently. I Want You So Hard, preceded by The Stranglers and Something But a Change. Sure, things are changing, but more would be better. And before that, Black Sunshine, White Zombie, because we fancied a bit of the hard stuff to kick off the show tonight. Well, shortly, hopefully, all being well, I'll be joined by a live guest, a man that I met in Glastonbury recently. We've got, it seems to me, several aspects of kind of challenges that are being presented to us in the modern world, and there seems to be more of them practically by the day, and they're so ubiquitous and so varied that it seems to me that we need as many different solutions as we can come up with, really. Again, I thoroughly enjoyed my 3 weeks talking to Rob Freeman about language and behaviour and about certain of the solutions that, without doubt, it seems are coming into ever more common need. And then last week we went to different realms entirely with Daniel Stone talking about shamanism and conscious dreaming, because it seems to me, I mean, I originally ended up on doing a radio show some 2.5 years ago, and we're still here and smiling. And I started doing it talking about the Mayan calendar and sacred geometry and other kind of energetic facets of life. So that's the kind of, it's always been my approach to the solution, is that to a certain extent, it's not going to be found at the level of the problem. And I really appreciate all the work that's being done kind of ceremonially and by shamanic peoples and by people who've not been so seriously misled as to the nature of our history, shall we say. And I think that all of that is part of the overall solution, as I see it. And Daniel, I thought, was showed just how different your world can be if you change your focus. I mean, there's a lot of us focusing, and rightly, as I say, on how to deal with the world that's presenting itself to us in the place that we live. But there's, and that's what we focus on, and our reality is kind of manifesting itself around that. But there are millions of people in the world who believe completely different things, and so appear. I mean, the more of them I meet, the more I realise that people genuinely are, in a sort of sense, formatting, producing their own world. I mean, sometimes I felt when I was talking to Daniel, it's like we were living in completely different worlds, even though we're apparently sharing a planet most of the time. But I think, in terms of solutions that I've personally found to be effective over the last couple of years or so, it's been the really simple ones, and many of them have actually been to do with sustaining my physical frame, as it were, more effectively than I used to. And so I have become, over the last 2 or 3 years particularly, interested in food. I've never really been one for supplements, so I've been interested in trying to find out how to keep the old body going as effectively as I can, and to, you know, I guess feed it right. It's something I know a lot better about feeding plants correctly than I do about feeding human beings. So on this evening's show, we're going to be joined by Duncan from the Glastonbury's Chocolate Love Temple. And I know that when I was staying with him the other weekend, with him and True, I was introduced to several things that I wasn't very familiar with, and I've really enjoyed them. And also, it's one of those things where, for many years now, various complementary therapists and one individual or another has been advising me to do various things, and I haven't really paid a lot of attention, but it seems to me that perhaps now's the time for me. I'm changing quite a lot anyway, so I'm personally really looking forward to this particular chat, and I reckon I'll probably learn quite a lot from it myself. So what I'm going to do is play a couple more brief tunes whilst I get in touch with Dunk, and then we can see where the conversation goes from there. Thanks very much to all of you for being out there. This is Mad Apple Circus and Let the Jury Sing. Haven't heard this one for a while, I don't think. That was Rob Heron and the Teapad Orchestra doing Fire in Biker, I think it was called. And now I believe I have a live guest with me on the line to talk about food and drinks and all manner of other things good for us and fun.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Hear you. Great.
Thanks very much for joining us. It's really great to have you on the line, sir.
Oh, thanks for inviting us onto your show.
I guess it'd be good, being as the Chocolate Love Temple is the name you ran with for your excellent chocolate emporium. I guess we better start with chocolate. Before you came across it, it's been of historical interest to quite a lot of people's, hasn't it, chocolate?
Yes, certainly. Our angle on chocolate is of the raw kind. So if people aren't sure what raw chocolate is, I'll perhaps begin there and explain that. Raw chocolate, so it's also known as cacao. But the difference between your raw chocolate and perhaps your, say, like dairy milk bar that people might consider to be chocolate is that the raw chocolate isn't heated over 37 degrees centigrade. And the important thing about that is that raw food and living foods are considered to be raw when they're kept below 37 degrees centigrade, because that's the point at which most enzymes are depleted and or destroyed. So it keeps all the enzymes and the minerals and the vitamins all intact. So all the health benefits and health giving qualities of the raw chocolate is kept intact. Also, obviously, like your usual kind of chocolates, what people think is chocolate tends to be really containing high levels of sugar. We don't use any sugar in our chocolate here at the Chocolate Love Temple. We primarily use a delicious syrup called Yacon syrup. And that's similar to like a maple syrup. It's a tree syrup again, which is very high in minerals and vitamins, and easily and effortlessly turned into glucose and absorbed into your bloodstream, and then so that you can use that as rapid energy. So raw chocolate, the big difference between raw chocolate and cooked chocolate is that raw chocolate also contains high levels of magnesium, which is a very deficient mineral in our Western diet. In fact, some of the reports that I've researched indicate that magnesium deficiency can lead to all sorts of like degenerative diseases and things like arthritis and cancers. So magnesium is a very important mineral in our diet. So and that can be, you can get that important mineral, the good news is, by eating raw chocolate. So
that's really cracking, isn't it? What else is in there that's good for us then?
Well, it's also high in antioxidant flavonoids. It strengthens the cardiovascular system. It's great if you want to substitute perhaps eating, you know, cooked sugary chocolate. It's a great substitute to switch over to putting in your diet more raw chocolate. We hand make all our own raw chocolate. There's other raw chocolate out there, which is super great and all good, but perhaps not as handmade. And you can also make your own chocolate. That's exciting to do as a project at home with your family and or your loved ones.
So do you sort of spread the skill of chocolate making?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, we have held workshops here. It's something that this is the interesting thing about a raw living foods diet, is it's about people becoming self-empowered with their own diet. You know, it's like getting yourself away from cooked, processed junk food in shiny packages, covered in media lies. And what this is doing, when you're getting into more of a raw living foods concept, you're freeing yourself from that. You start to really see what is truly energetic to be putting in your body, and what essentially is going to deplete you of energy. And the thing is, when you're eating, say, I don't know, like on an extreme end, and say something like really junky, like a pot noodle or something like that, or Rice Krispies or this kind of thing, like, so kind of heavily processed foods, there's really very little life force and prana and energy contained within those food sources. And what they really do, you eat one of those pot noodles or something, or say like a heavy Sunday roast dinner, and you can just see the results of that. You know, rather than giving you energy, it actually takes a lot of energy and depletes you of energy. So then people feel sluggish and lackluster, and then there's all the sort of knock-on effects of eating a heavily processed diet. You know, bad skin, coughs, colds, a depleted immune system. Many of these things can be attributed to the diet and the nutrition and the food, the daily food nutritional choices that a person takes.
Well, I must admit, I've experienced very few colds really since I started eating more healthily. It's one of the things that I've really noticed, and that's even if I've, you know, occasionally I've been into, like, you know, those school Christmas plays you get where they've got 200 or 300 people packed into a hall, and everybody's got a cold, and I'm thinking, oh no, yeah, I'm gonna cop for it here. And I've sometimes got away even with that, which, I mean, it must be the diet, because it never used to be like that.
Well, totally. I mean, it's like, it's essentially about keeping your immune system healthy, you know. I mean, nutrition is a facet of it. Obviously, you know, like lots of healthy exercise. I mean, one thing that I really recommend, and that's really good that people don't realize, is a process called lymphocyzing. Have you heard of lymphocyzing?
No, I've heard of the lymph, but lymphocyzing is a new one on me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if you think of it like this, so I mean, with our blood in our body, that's getting pumped around our blood, but you know, with the pump of our heart. So that's our sort of like blood and cardiovascular system. But what we also have is we have a lymphatic system. And the way which our lymphatic system operates more effectively is we need to get our sort of like shake and awaken our bodies. So things that are good for like lymphocyzing would be swimming, would be cycling, jogging. But one of the best ways to lymphocyze is like trampolining or rebounding. Because what you're doing on like a trampoline is like when you're bouncing up and down, you're simultaneously lymphocyzing. And when you activate your lymphatic system, that basically assists in the detoxification and the rapid elimination of toxins in your system. You know, whether they be from foods that you've eaten or environmental toxins or even emotional toxicity, you know, say you're feeling like, you know, angry or jealous or upset or something's happened, like you can go and have a good bounce on, like, you probably know what I'm talking about, those like those little bouncy trampettes you can get.
Trampolines generally have become pretty popular over recent years.
And I mean, they're good laugh as well, they're good fun, so you know, it's great. Bounce your way into your day, and it's got all sorts of beneficial benefits. I mean, this morning I've got a sort of and it's maybe like a 6-foot trampoline in my garden, and just lovely to like go and have a bounce in the sunshine. It felt a bit spring-like today, which was lovely. And it doesn't take long. I'm just talking like 5-10 minutes.
It does have to be said that your trampoline is a very vigorous form of exercise, I've found.
Yeah, vigorous, but kind of like gentle. So, yeah, that activates your lymphatic system. And that's something that a lot of people don't perhaps realize is a system that you sort of actually have to take some physical action to kick it into gear, you know, to get it happening. And certainly if anybody's doing any kind of detox diet or anything like that, then I'd recommend one of the things to do along that detox is bouncing and or swimming, cycling. I think maybe something as vigorous as maybe like roller skating as well would probably be quite a good one.
Yeah. To get back to the chocolate a little bit.
Oh yes, yeah, chocolate.
I was thinking that really one of the advantages I've noticed, because of it's obviously I discovered raw chocolate before I discovered you.
Yes, sure.
I've noticed that you don't need kind of like anything like as much of it. It's for a start off, it's really tasty, but yes. It seems to do its job particularly well. It's not like I used to find if I was approaching, shall we say, the commercial chocolates that are by and large, I'd kind of want another one by the time I'd finished one. Actually kind of a couple of small squares of the raw chocolate, you know, is enough. And do all of the good things that are in there, do they work like trace elements, like kind of homeopathically? You don't really need that much of it. It's just good to have it in your body anyway.
Yeah, certainly. I guess it's going back to, the minerals in the chocolate are really good. They're antioxidants. But it's also about quality rather than quantity. When you eat quality superfoods and you super mineralize your body, so whether it's chocolate or some of the other superfoods people may have heard of, things like maca, marine phytoplankton, not necessarily a superfood, but something I consider to be a superfood, seaweeds.
Hemp seeds.
Yeah, hemp seeds, excellent source of essential fatty acids, really, really great, and also your omega 3, 6, and 9s. Hemp seed and hemp oils are a great alternative to perhaps if someone's following more of a vegan diet, they're a good alternative to fish oils. So the hemp oils, but yeah, just saying what you're talking about is it's certainly about the quality. If you eat high quality nutrition, then you don't need the quantity. And what you're having when you're eating those sugary chocolate bars is you're just feeding like seven generations of sugar addicts. You're just feeding a sugar addiction and probably feeding more than likely you got some kind of like parasitic activity going on in your body. So you're not actually even feeding yourself. You're kind of feeding parasites. And people would be surprised at how many people, without even realizing, how many people do have parasites, especially if you eat meats or fish. It's quite likely that you've got parasites in your body.
I did encounter these ideas myself when I decided to have a thorough clean on the insides.
Yeah.
I think the quality versus quantity argument's an interesting one as well, because I guess that maybe one of the reason why people see, because you see huge amounts of food going out the supermarkets in the trolley, and I don't need anything like that much myself. Maybe people are eating a lot because their systems are still seeking the sort of elements that they need.
So much of it's sugar. In the supermarkets, it's so much sugar. It's like, if you look at all those tins and pizzas and pastas and what else have they got in there? I mean, like just the whole array of sort of like processed and packaged foods contain large amounts of sugar. And sugar, when you eat loads of sugar, it just kind of like replicates itself and makes you crave more sugar. And again, that may be you craving sugar, but it also could be parasites craving sugar.
You see, it's funny, isn't it? Because the sugar, we describe it as an addiction and stuff, and I can quite see that, because there's bits of it that I've found it hard to shake. But at the same time, during my progress through the kind of the dietary changes, I went from more or less living out of petrol stations and, you know, service areas on Ginster's pasties and think, well, it's kind of went with the job and, you know, all the other things. I went from that to eating. Nowadays, I eat more or less entirely, you know, either fresh food or dried dried food and things like that, hardly any processed food at all. And I went through literally realizing that I was standing in one of these garages that I used to more or less feed myself from, and there wasn't anything in there I could buy. And that's more or less the truth now when you look in.
Yeah, man, that's the realization. You know, if you go in a supermarket, like 90%, 90-95% of that stuff in supermarkets isn't fit for human consumption. You know, I mean, on more of the on the other side, not on the other side of the coin, but like in terms of living foods, you know, living foods, and with the spring coming up, the exciting thing about spring just being just around the corner is that we're going to be able to go out and pick things like nettles, for example. It's brilliant to juice nettles and cleavers and horsetail, those kind of things, full of like minerals and enzymes, all living, vital, prana-filled, chlorophyll-rich foods, which you can juice. That's a really great strategy. And not from the supermarkets. And also, you know, you can go and collect those things just going out for a walk in the countryside.
Yes, there's absolutely plenty of nettles and cleavers about once you learn how to recognise them.
Yeah, yeah. So. Obviously, that's one of the most important things if you're ever gathering wild wild foods. The first rule, I went on an amazing walk with a brother who's since ascended, actually, who was a wild foods, raw foods expert, and he taught me that the most important thing if you're going and collecting anything in the wild is first of all to identify and know the poisonous plants. So that is something to, it's always good if you're going to do wild food walks is probably to hook up with somebody that knows and can clearly identify things first of all. I mean, stings are a pretty easy one. Nettles, they're pretty easy to identify. And horsetail, that's pretty easy. And there's quite a few other ones out there, like, say, parsley or what's that other delicious mints and things like that. They're quite easy to spot.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? If you go out with somebody that knows on some of these foraging walks, I find it amazing how once you have been shown, you do tend to remember plants, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things like by their taste and their smell and things that you can do. And I mean, another thing always to do is always to take the tiniest little. If you're not certain, you can sometimes take the tiniest amount. I mean, really, the first thing to know is, identify and be very clear on what are the poisonous plants. I think there's one out there called Lady's Mantle, which is poisonous. And if you take like the minute amount of it, it actually kind of like really stings your tongue.
Really? I know that plant. I didn't know it was poisonous, though. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, we'll double check. I could be corrected on whether or not that one's poisonous or not. Is it late? That's what I mean. Is like that's not really my realm of I'm still a fairly new and a beginner to wild foods.
But I mean, the food that we get in the supermarkets, as we've said, is probably only cheap because it hasn't got anything in it that you need. It certainly seems to me that because one of the things that people talk about is the cost, isn't it, of getting fresh food and things. And it can be more expensive than the cheaper supermarket options. But at the same time, you can need a whole lot less of it. Well, where would you start?
Yeah, but what's your health worth?
Well,
the best question is to ask yourself, what's your health worth? Because really, like, if you're going to stick, you know, if you're going to look after your car and take it for an MOT and you're going to, like, spend all your money, you know, like on a vehicle, your body is your temple. Your body is your vehicle. So your body as your temple and your body as your vehicle, like, you've got to really think, you know, like, this is my you know, this is my temple that I'm going to have for the, you know, for the rest of my existence on this planet. Like, I've not heard yet of anybody being offered a body upgrade.
It is funny how, I mean, again, it's taken years of advice for me. Some bits of advice, such as drinking more water, I was easily being given that advice for a good 5 years before I actually took it on board. And yeah, the same's true with the food as well. It's interesting, isn't it, how there seems to be an almost habitual carelessness. And yet, once you start approaching the food thing, it's a bit like, isn't it a bit like how if your body's normally always working really properly and then suddenly you get a bad back or a bad shoulder, you suddenly realise how easy it is. I think it's the same thing with the starting to eat properly. I didn't really notice how ropey the body was until it started improving.
Yeah, very much so. It's a little bit like you're kind of inside the picture and you can't see outside the picture, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to drag you back to the chocolate once more.
Okay.
The chocolate's
chocolate,
really good for us.
Chocolate.
You must have chosen to focus on chocolate for a reason. It's really good for us.
Well, I think one of the great things about chocolate is it appeals to everybody. You know, so in terms of like turning people on to super healthy superfoods, juicing, living foods, raw foods and everything, chocolate is a really good doorway for that, because a huge percentage of people really like chocolate. And then when they realize that they can have a raw chocolate, a chocolate that doesn't contain sugar, that's actually delicious and nutritious for them, people then can then go, oh, okay, so you do chocolate that is delicious. What else out there can I have in my diet that's also delicious, and that's full of amino acids, minerals, enzymes, and that's good for me? And I think that's a good a good entrance for people to realize that looking after your diet and thinking about the nutrition that you put in your body is a positive step forward for people to take.
Yeah, it's an interesting link. I must admit, I was struck by how many people were asking about such things in a shop it's not what you'd normally expect from a chocolate shop.
It's just a guy's. We're really an immortality portal.
Yeah.
So with chocolate as the carrot.
Yeah.
Chocolate carrots. Yeah.
Well, they certainly seem to be going pretty well. What sort of stuff do you put in them to lure eating more of them?
Well, first of all, nothing addictive.
Yeah.
Secondly, I mean, we add superfoods. We use here, we use maca, which is known as an adaptogen, and that assists in the rapid uptake of the minerals in the chocolate into your bloodstream, so it's very effective.
Where does that come from? What's that?
Okay, so maca is, if you imagine, it looks a little bit like a beetroot, except like a kind of a cream-coloured beetroot. They tend to grow primarily in Peru, up in the Andes, and they're like a root vegetable, but when they're taken out and they're dried and then they're powdered, and they're particularly high in minerals because they grow high up where the mineralization of the soil is still rich. I mean, that's another problem with our Western diet, is many things that we eat are demineralized. So the strategy now in a lot of like living foods is to remineralize yourself. Probably the fastest way to do that is through something called fulvic minerals, or another thing called shilajit. But fulvic minerals particularly, they're really great because you can just like take 7 or 8 drops of fulvic minerals in the morning in water, drink that down, and that helps to rapidly remineralize your body.
Yes, I heard about those for the first time last night, actually, on people's internet radio, because Sean was talking.
Minerals, really?
Sean was talking to a doctor about them, and he said that he got several different sorts, I believe, and some of them didn't work, but the ones, the right ones, he said, were miraculous. He said he woke up the next morning feeling loads better, which backs up, doesn't it, this idea that what we're actually seeking is to is to satisfy a mineral deficiency as much as a hunger, really. And once we realise that, then suddenly the cost of some of the apparently more expensive alternatives doesn't seem so high. Because, I mean, one of the things I'm struck by is when I'm eating salads, and the rawer and the less processed it is, it seems to me the less I need. So, what sort of things do you base, your daily diet on? You actually basically seem to live off chocolate during the day, don't you? Tell the truth.
Tell the truth now. You just live on chocolate. Pretty much. Well, we have a delicious drink here that we make, which is a chocolate elixir. And the chocolate elixir, so the base of it is like a tea base. A little bit like if you imagine kind of like an Indian chai, how you make an Indian chai. It's not got the same things in, although we do use cinnamon, cardamom, vanilla, licorice. So I guess that's kind of chai-like. But then what we add into that is we use what's also getting pretty popular now, medicinal mushrooms, in particular shaga mushroom. And the reishi mushroom. And these are not ground mushrooms, as in they're not like the little button mushrooms that grow up on the earth. They actually grow primarily out of birch trees. And they're renowned for having some fantastic healing and longevity qualities, because they essentially go in and they help heal the... heal the systems in our body. They assist with
I haven't heard of
your immune system. Primarily they heal your central immune system, and that's like really crucial to think, like, if you heal your immune system, a little bit like what you were saying, then if you do find yourself in a situation in a room with lots of people with coughs and colds and stuff, and you've strengthened your immune system, you're unlikely to be, to be pulled down or to get that virus or bacteria or whatever, because your immune system's already strengthened.
Where do those medicinal mushrooms come from? Because I haven't heard of them before. I have tasted the chocolate drink.
So that's in the foundation of the chocolate drink. The medicinal mushroom, where do they come from? Primarily northern climates. They like cold climates. So you get them in like Latvia, northern Canada. We have heard of people. We did have some at the Chocolate Love Temple from Scotland. So they like cold climates.
Oh, right. So some of them can be grown on Albion then. I'm always interested in people who are growing.
They can be. But yeah, just going back to what the diet and the chocolate elixir. So yeah, so you've got like a sort of medicinal mushroom and vanilla licorice base. And then on top of that, we add in cacao, of course, which we use in a powder form. Cacao, lacuma, which is a fruit, which is particularly good. Its main benefit is it's particularly good for skin elasticity. So anybody looking for a little bit of youthfulness and skin elasticity, I recommend lacuma powder. So it's got lacuma, maca, cacao, and then we do sweeten it with a small amount of maple syrup. So that makes a sort of healing chocolate elixir drink, which is very yummy and very sustaining.
I found the cacao powder really great because I actually really like a nice cup of hot chocolate, and it's great. It's great to have something that's the kind of real thing, as it were.
Yeah, totally. Because I mean, most of those hot chocolate powders that you get in supermarkets, they're like loads of chocolate and filler and
probably nothing to do with chocolate at all.
Well, no, if you look at them, you should often on those kind of things, it says, oh, contains 0.3% cacao powder, you know, and that's not even raw cacao powder. That'd be cacao powder that's been like heavily processed and cooked. So even the cacao powder that you're getting in those, you know, hot chocolate mixes isn't really the genuine thing.
I think the cooking thing is an interesting point, to taking it to above a given temperature, because we make apple juice every year, and basically we deliberately take it over that temperature to pasteurize it, so it does sort of kills it stone dead, and it means that it lasts for years in a bottle then. But we know there's a difference between the living and the cooked, don't we? And as I say, I think the cacao powder's great, because I don't drink a lot of hot chocolate. It's down to that having it occasionally, really, I reckon. But I can't imagine getting that every day. And the goat's milk as well. That was something else I discovered at your place. Have you been doing that for long?
Well, not much. I mean, I don't tend to have a lot. That's pretty much like the only milk product that I have is goat's milk and sometimes goat's cheese. Although I do feel really over and above all of it, really, if you want a really clean diet, you essentially want to like eradicate most things that are white in color. So that's milks and breads, and things that are white, because they don't really have a color. They don't really have a color in them, and they don't they're not so digestible in the body.
It's really funny that, isn't it? Because I was Jess told me that when she was over in Nepal, and she's travelled a lot more than I have, that what people really look for is the white stuff. They want white rice and white sugar and all that, though they've got the unrefined pure stuff there.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. But again, in terms of substituting, certainly I think like if you're not sure what to do with milk, I think moving from cow's milk to say like a goat's milk. Ideally an unpasteurized goat's milk, you know, that's the ideal thing, is a good step to take. And that's a lot of things with, changing your diet, making changes in your diet. Like I generally recommend people to make like sometimes, I mean, sure, if you want to do a massive overnight change to raw food and you feel you can do that, then totally go for it. But a lot of people, if they've got children and they've got busy lives and things like this, it's still good to like make incremental steps in your life and to, you know, begin substituting things as you discover them, you know, begin substituting things. I mean, the best type of milks to make, if you have an upright blender at home, the best type of milks to have are nut and seed milks. Well, seed milks actually are the best things. So that's like soaked overnight seeds, and I think hemp seeds are great, and sunflower and pumpkin seeds are also great. And the great thing with creating that type of a milk, a nut and seed milk, is it's not very expensive. So you can create your own milks, your own nut and seed milks. You soak the nuts and soak the seeds, blend them up in a blender, sieve them, and voila, you have your own nut milk.
I am quite interested in this. Has been one of the challenges for me because I do like the occasional cup of tea. I got rid of most of the milk, really, but I've tried the nut milk. That's really great. I was pretty pleased to find the goat milk, because although I mean, you look at it and it's coming in a Tetra Pak, and it's probably as much like goat milk as the cow milk is like cow milk. But I feel that perhaps the goats are being less mechanistically farmed. Might be a delusion. One of the things we tried actually along the way was oat milk, which I really, I kind of quite like that, but it was really expensive. And then I found I could make that by just soaking oats in water.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's great. You know, it's about doing, a lot of these things maybe at first seem like difficult to do, but once you've initiated them and you've done the process three or four times, say making a nut milk or a seed milk, you actually realise it's maybe not as tricky as you first thought it might be.
And something else is that, I mean, I think it's important to emphasise that, you know, one little change at a time is about as the best people can. That's the way it kind of happened to me.
And yeah,
you can, playing with the nut milk, I think, is really, really a good idea. But the thing is that I find that if I do something three or four times and taste it again, you kind of get used to it. And you can, being as we've been kind of fairly conclusively habituated in one way, it's fairly easy to train yourself to like new things, I find, nowadays.
Yeah, you develop a taste for it, for sure. It's like, I mean, we've got a product here called, I briefly mentioned it early, called Marine Phytoplankton. And that's just hands down incredible product. It's like a brain food. It's a complete food, so it contains protein, essential fatty acids, minerals, vitamins, enzymes. It's right at the what I call the top of the food chain. A lot of in a lot of media things has been like turned upside down. I think that's happened to the food chain as well. It's like chlorophyll, that's not at the bottom of the food chain. That's like right at the top of the food chain. It's like absolutely awesome. You eat chlorophyll and chlorella, spirulina and marine phytoplankton and you feel awesome. You
Isn't
know,
that amazing?
It's firing on all cylinders. It's like cha-ching. It's like, yeah, this is what we want. You know, this is what we've been asking for. This is the brain food, the chlorophyll.
I say, because one of the things I think is that there's so many different things, because this is one that I have heard recommended before, and I'm kind of hesitant about making myself kind of reliant on any sort of additives and supplements and stuff, because you have to keep going out and buying them, don't you?
Good point. Well, you don't necessarily. I have been researching more into marine phytoplankton, for example, and a lot of these things, you potentially could even grow your own marine phytoplankton in a fish tank. I mean, it would certainly be a DIY project. And I have not embarked on this particular DIY project myself. But if you check out on YouTube, there are people that are successfully growing their own plankton. So, again, it's another thing where you're relinquishing your power, relinquishing probably what you're, you know, like your sweat equity, you going out to have to work to then to go and buy the food, to then go out to have to work to buy the food. You're getting out of that loop and, like, yes, you know, you can grow some of these things yourself. Yes, it would be a project. And yes, you would have to initially dedicate some research, time, effort, energy, maybe buying some of the things that you would need at first, like fish tanks, for example.
Yeah.
That's not a project that I have tried myself, but I have researched it a little bit and I have seen videos of people successfully making literally even in like I think I saw somebody making it in like those, you know, those 2 liter Evian bottles,
yeah,
the water bottles, and like cutting them off from that and then like bubbling oxygen or something through like these water through water and then like adding some plankton in, and then because the plankton is the source of all life, it replicates itself, man. So you can, because it replicates itself, you can grow it.
Well, I mean, that'd be a really good thing to be doing, because I gather the plankton are one of the things that's taken a bit of a beating out in the sea.
Right, yes.
But
okay.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that we get from that we can find in various foods around the place, although not all of it in one place. I mean, one of the things I really like, I must admit, is the hemp seeds, because that's something that you definitely could get plenty of if people had, you know, take their foot off the brakes a bit.
Well, for sure, yeah. I mean, we know that hemp as a plant is definitely a great solution for humans. in that it's got so many uses, and it's a wonderful sturdy plant, and it gives lots of seed, doesn't it? You know, and then we can, you know, we can soak that seed and make yummy hemp milk and get the essential fatty acids from a plant base, rather than, say, like cod liver oil or something like that, yeah. You know, which is...
I really like it because, a lot of, I mean...
Fish have suffered for things like cod liver oil.
And hemp could be, you know, hemp could be kind of global. I'm quite interested that some of those medicinal mushrooms grow up in Scotland as well, because obviously something that that I guess we need to... It's really good to be using the 21st century the way we can, but we need to be kind of bearing in mind, don't we, what it is we can do locally and in our communities if push came to shove.
Yeah, really, absolutely, man. That's really important to bring it back to, yeah, what can you grow in your community? I totally agree. I mean, for example, what you were just saying, I mean, so chaga mushroom, I'm not sure about, like...
How do you spell that? How do you spell its name?
C-H-A-G-A.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. But I know certainly something like shiitake mushroom, you've probably seen, like, people can do inoculation on logs and grow shiitake mushrooms.
Hey, man, yeah, that's one of my favourite projects I ever saw out near Bristol. They had loads of them and loads of shiitake mushrooms, all growing out of turkey oak logs.
Yeah, that's right. You get the logs. I've not tried that one either, but, yeah, if you've got lots of space, that's a cool project, man, to do, is to grow mushrooms. So, I mean, there are a lot of things... You know, what we're looking at, I mean, something, a project that I've done and that we were running here at the Chocolate Love Temple all through the spring and the summer, and we'll most likely be restarting again in the spring, is growing wheatgrass and barleygrass.
Yes, I've heard really amazing things about wheatgrass.
Yeah, man, it's been proven, if you've heard of, if you research Anne Wigmore, and the Hippocrates Institute coming out of, I think it was like Washington or New York area out in the States. The Hippocrates Institute has successfully cleared people, multiple cases, successful cases of people dissolving cancers and ridding themselves of cancers in their bodies through like a 30-day intensive wheatgrass fast.
Yes, I think there was a man called, I think he was called Dr. Martin Williams, who did a show with one of the old MSI presenters, Vibe, and he was using breath, but he also was emphasising wheatgrass as a central part of the cure, and he was using it too for all manner of things. We've got a couple of questions in the chat box. One is one is saying, what's chlorella? And what's the best way to take it? Any tips on the best way to take chlorella, it says?
Yeah, well, chlorella, it's a little bit, again, it's an algae. Chlorella is a little bit like spirulina. So it's a, I'm pretty sure chlorella is a lake algae as opposed to a marine algae. But you have to forgive me if I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure. And chlorella is very, very lovely. My favorite way to have chlorella is in freshly squeezed orange juice. You take like freshly squeezed orange juice, couple of tablespoons of chlorella, blend that up and drink orange juice with chlorella. And that is really yummy. The only down effect is you will have green teeth. So. You better check in the mirror before you go out. Chlorella. Yeah. So it's an algae. Again, it's something that contains essential fatty acids. I mean, the incredible things. If you think about what's going to give you some of the best life force and prana, it's going to be things that are dark green. So your dark green leafy vegetables like kale and spinach and things like that. But then also your algaes and your seaweeds, which are also dark green, because essentially the way I see it is this ties in with the wheatgrass. Is like sometimes I call wheatgrass liquids. Once you juice it, liquid sunlight or liquid sunshine, because essentially all what's happened is The wheatgrass seeds grown, it's like connected with the sunlight. It's translated all that sunlight into chlorophyll. And then you're essentially imbuing yourself with the chlorophyll, which is directly connected to the sunlight. So
that's completely miraculous, really. It's one of my one of my favourite bits of information was that to realise that trees generate 80% of their complex carbohydrates from sunlight using their leaves, and it goes into the tree and down. That's where most of their food comes from. And
that's
we're still benefiting from basically that same kind of metabolism, aren't we?
For sure. I mean, you and I have chatted a little bit around sunlight before as well, haven't we? And even this amazing people may have heard of the processes of what people sometimes refer to as sun gazing. And this you can pretty much do fairly safely in as the sun is rising for the first 10, 15 minutes. But particularly, it's lovely to do with friends standing barefoot watching the sun set, isn't it?
I bet
lots of people have done that just because it's a beautiful thing to do. But also realizing that, you know, you're imbuing, I mean, that is like fully imbuing and activating your pineal gland in the center of our head there. It's like activating that and energizing and translating all the geometries of light into the pineal, and that in itself is feeding us. That's feeding us on a different level altogether. You know, that's sunlight, prana, and nutrition.
I do like to remember the man in India. I can't remember. Yeah. I can never put my finger on his name, but he basically, I think, if I remember rightly, lived over 400 days under the supervision of the American establishment without drinking any water or eating any food. And he was looking at the sun, and it's apparently completely well attested. And they were saying that his pineal was actually, plum-like as well. He had
plum-like.
Yeah. And so he was.
Pulsating.
He did. That means there is at least one character out there who lived for like a year and a half or something by just looking at the sun. And it's spoken about a lot in ancient literature, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying to everybody, okay, right, go out and just be like sunlightarians, sun gazers. But certainly bringing that in as a if you can, a daily practice or even in the days, you know, sometimes in some of these cloudy days that we get here in England and, the sun bursts through low in the afternoon sky, just to really just stop what you're doing and tune in, you know, just even if it's for like 30 seconds, 45 seconds, you know, just like dial into the sun because that's the source of our nutrition is the sun. Like without the sun, we wouldn't have anything to eat.
I think that's absolutely true. Well, I think there's probably quite a lot more energy in the sunlight than people get to give it credit for, but it's certainly responsible for growing all the food.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. If it's responsible for growing all the food, imagine what it can do when you just like tune into it yourself.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, I'm not recommending people necessarily, like, at midday when it's the absolute strongest to stand there with your eyes open. I'm not recommending that at all, you know, but still to, you know, turn your face up to the sun with your eyes closed and really, like, you know, actually be imbuing the sunlight.
Again, because it makes a lot of difference, actually, it's good for you just taking it on board accidentally, but actually focusing on it and setting your intent on it changes the quality of the light you're getting, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, because you're making it, you're sort of like giving it that, you're just taking a break in your, not taking a break in your life, but you're maybe just stopping being busy and doing and just being in a space of allowing.
Yeah.
Which is a different, as you say, is a different space. Being busy and thinking, oh, well, yeah, well, I'm just moving this furniture in the sunshine, so great. But actually putting the furniture down and then like stopping and like just letting yourself tune into the sunlight is beyond important. It's like crucial right now for humans is to dial into the sun.
And I guess really when we're talking about eating natural foods, I mean, I know it's especially the greens, but when we're eating foods that we've either grown ourselves or know the people that have grown them, we are eating something that is basically reformed sunshine. And the same is not true of the stuff that's turning up in plastic bags and boxes.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. It's things that contain, a good way to kind of look at it sometimes is you can kind of look at something and ask yourself the question, you know, does it contain sort of like life force, you know, does it look like it will, a better question to ask yourself is if you're looking at something, you're thinking, will that give me energy and prana and life force? Is that going to enliven me or will that deplete me? And sometimes if you ask yourself that question before you consume whatever is in front of you, is that going to like give me life force and chi or is that going to deplete me? That's a good question, a good check-in moment to have with yourself.
Yeah. And then start to include a bit more of the stuff that actually it is true, because once again, like putting your intent on the sunshine, putting your intent on the food and paying attention to it rather than, because again, there's a tendency, isn't there, in the modern world to eat on the hoof and to just grab something and chew it whilst you're walking down the street. To actually pay attention to your food does change your attitude to it as well, doesn't it? I find that food tastes a lot better if I haven't got other distractions. I don't have a telly, as many, many people on people's internet radio don't. Mm-hmm. But I have found that it's probably probably better to eat without the radio, you know, actually treat it as a job that requires your full attention rather than a part of it.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, no telly. I mean, yeah, I also have not had a telly for, 20 years or something. I've not had a telly. And a telly, interestingly, is definitely a prana sucker.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to lose nutrition, if you want to become nutritionally depleted, spend 2 hours in front of a television and watch loads of adverts.
Yeah,
and that in itself is a nutrition life force sucker.
Well, I mean, you're feeding your life force with the food. It's really easy to deplete it through many ways. I see Johnny Meath has asked whether wheatgrass has a flavour. Does it have a taste?
Does it have a flavour? Yes, certainly it has a flavour. Some people really resonate with flavour and. Sometimes when people first come across it, some people don't like the flavour. I mean, wheatgrass, if you've ever been, you know, like out in a field and you've like picked a few blades of grass and you've just like munched on a few blades of grass, you know, just like as sometimes we do like on a nice sunny day. It's kind of like that. I mean, it tastes like grass. That's not a very good answer.
It tastes green.
Trying to describe a taste, that's a tricky one. I think, actually, you know, it's a good question, because it does actually contain quite a lot of sucrose. So once you first get past the sort of like chlorophyll, greeny, maybe like seaweedy type taste is the best thing I can think of. It's actually quite sweet.
Yeah.
It is actually quite sweet.
And you do get quite, because I've tried the wheatgrass tea and it's actually quite a nice flavour, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice to blend it in, you know, like, I mean, we often make super green smoothies, you know, so you'll combine hemp milk with a shot of wheatgrass, juice in some kale, juice in some spinach. So you're not necessarily just taking a shot of the wheatgrass, although you totally can have it like that. You can totally just shot a wheatgrass a little bit like it's quite fun, a little bit like a shot of vodka and then have a lemon at the ready and then clamp down on a lemon. That certainly livens up the experience.
Yeah. So are your green drinks entirely green then? You don't put anything sweet in them or anything?
Well, it's totally up to you who's making them. Well, my friend, I had a friend who also has recently ascended, and he used to make the most intense dark green juices, and he would like put with no sweetness, just like stinging nettles, cleavers, spinach. What other crazy green things did he put in there?
Hawthorn leaves.
Yes, and stuff like that. Hawthorn leaves, broccoli, just like everything green. And then sometimes would even like, you know, and then like blend the whole thing up as well. And this would be more than a green juice. It would be like a dark green liquid smoothie. And like it was almost like give you the pint glass and then you just got to like gulp the whole thing down in one breath almost without kind of gagging. intense, but hey,
can you make them taste nice as well?
Yeah, sometimes he could, but usually he'd just serve it straight and it was just like, oh, this is just like intense. But afterwards, afterwards it's kind of then it's more like kind of an initiation into green juice experience. But they don't have to be like that at all, you know. You can put bee pollen in them. Yummy, you know, like a couple of tablespoons of bee pollen, sweeten it up with the green juice. They blend very lovely together, a bit of bee pollen and the green juice.
It wasn't until I'd forgotten about the bee pollen because we were given we got some when we were in Spain a few years back, and it wasn't wasn't until I met up with you that I remembered it. And
okay.
One of my first kind of conversions to, well, one of the regular raw food things I do, as you know, is my breakfast. Which is kind of like it's jumbo oats mixed with goji berries and linseed and nettle seeds.
And, yeah, nettle seeds, really good, man.
A bit of date and things like that. But it's I can't remember why I brought up the bloody breakfast cereal now.
The breakfast cereal.
It's
because one of your regular raw food delights.
The water I pour on it effectively turns into oat milk overnight.
Yeah.
And all of that, but
okay.
I did have a reason for bringing it up, but it has slipped my mind. That does, alas, unfortunately, occasionally happen even on the radio. I'll tell you what,
well,
look.
Hey, if I had some marine phytoplankton right now, Dr. Rock, I'd pass you a large chunk.
Would it help?
I'm not sure if we can dematerialize it and rematerialize it on your end quite yet.
I'm sure that time's going to come.
Yeah,
I'm
man,
sure
we know.
Actually, Johnny's been saying that he used to hate kale, but he's all right with it now. And I mean, I really didn't used to like greens. I really like them now, and kale's one of my favourites.
Yeah, kale. Well, there's a few nice things that you can do with kale. Here's a really nice recipe for working with kale. If you're not that fond of it, I mean, that's one thing actually. Some kale and spinach is sometimes actually okay if you do give it a little bit of heat and blanch it very lightly, that actually makes it somewhat more digestible.
Yeah.
Because in some of these very heavy green leaves, there's I can't recall at this moment the name of it, but there's like an acrid acid or something that isn't very digestible, which does get depleted in some level in like a little bit of heating. So steaming things is quite good. That's also a great way to transition towards eating more greens and stuff. Instead of boiling them or cooking them, you say get one of those nice bamboo kind of steamers, or a metal steamer, but the bamboo ones are nice.
Yeah.
And you put in your bamboo steamer, say if you were like making say if you were just like simmering some quinoa or something like that. Or you can even just do it straight. You just pop have a pan on a heat, just like you would normally steaming, and then steaming kale and spinach is a nice thing to steam. But the recipe I was going to talk about is massaged kale. So what you do is you just strip the leaves off of the main stalk, chuck it in a bowl, make a nice dressing. We like using, for example, olive oil, a high quality virgin cold pressed olive oil, then a pinch of cayenne pepper, lemon juice and paprika. paprika's real yummy with kale. And then you basically make a dressing, and then you pour the dressing over the kale that you've stripped off the stalks, and you literally massage it in a bowl with your fingers, with your hands. I'm like doing the action now, but you can't see it. So you massage it as though you're giving it a massage for, say, like 5-10 minutes. And again, what we were talking about earlier, you know, you imbue some love and some energy and some, you know, if you're into like mantras you know, even just going, I mean, when I first started like chefing a long time ago, I was in an ashram, and I remember someone said, oh, whenever you cut things, it's really good just to say peace, love, peace, love, peace, love, peace, love, as you say, chop the carrot or whatever you're chopping. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really got into that at the time. I was like, wow, that's a really nice, lovely thing to do, because you keep focused, as what you were saying earlier, you keep focused on what you're doing, preparing your food even prior to eating it. So you're doing like peace, love, peace, love, peace, love, peace, love, chop, 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 chop. You're imbuing your food with that energy. You're imbuing your food with your energy and with the focus, and, you know, and with gratitude as well, is like a lovely thing to do. And yeah, so you can be massaging that kale. And then you can leave it for, say, half an hour or something, so that it can soak in. Or if you're organized enough, you can do it the night before, you know, the day before the massage kale. And that makes a really lovely way, like a real lovely additive to sort of like, if you're having a nice green salad, to have this kale in there as well, you know, this massage green kale. It tastes very kind of nutritious and sometimes quite dense, quite earthing.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of thing. Like, if people get into like a raw food diet sometimes too quickly, sometimes like people get a bit kind of like, ooh, like a little bit off with the fairies. And so thinking about grounding things that you can do is really good. And I think kale and some of the, like the dark green leafy vegetables, especially kale and spinach and broccoli, they're quite good for staying quite grounded.
And actually growing them is quite good for staying grounded. And that's
then you're like really super dedicated, like yourself, Dr. Rock.
Well, it's one of the ones that you can grow in pots and things like that. So you can actually.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Nick Nomick in the chat room. He's
Hi, Nick.
He's reminded me why it was that I went on to my breakfast cereal. He said he can confirm on the bee pollen awesomeness. Know why they all buzz.
And
that's why I brought the breakfast up, was because I've started putting just half a spoonful of the bee pollen in now, and it really does make it taste dead good.
Yeah, and the bee pollen's interesting as well, because it isn't just about the pollen. It's about the energy of the bees. And I don't know if anyone out there's kind of like ever spent some time sitting, not too close, but, you know, close enough to a beehive to like check out the resonant the hum of the beehive is like, wow. I got to spend some time out. I was running some Kundalini yoga and raw food retreats in the south of France, down in a place called Rennes-le-Château. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I've heard of Rennes-le-Château.
You ever been there down Rennes-le-Château?
No, I haven't. No, I've read a lot about it.
Awesome, off the Richter scale in awesomeness. This place is like super far out, like medieval throwback experience. It's like incredible down there, and the energy down there is amazing. And I had the good fortune to be spending like 3 or 4 summers down there around 2008, 2009. And I was down there in a beautiful space. It was actually called Le Val Dieu, the Valley of God, where I was staying. And if anyone wants an amazing, incredible far out holiday, check out Rennes-le-Château and Le Val Dieu and that area down in the south of France. It's very exciting down there, and some beautiful, natural springs as well, and great spring water down there. But what I was talking about is I down there, I had an experience, with bees, and being kind of like, myself and my friend who I mentioned earlier, we were on a bit of a barefoot adventure scurrying up round, climbing on rocks and everything, and we came across this this beehive, but it was a it was one of those wild beehives.
Oh yeah.
So it's not one of these box beehives. It was like an actual real kind of like beehive that the bees had like kind of created out of like this old tree stump or something. And we came across this beehive and we were just like, whoa, look at this beehive. This is like incredible. And the bees were there and they were buzzing around it and everything. And it was a beautiful sunny day. And we just sat pretty close to the beehive, you know, like a meter, a couple of meters away from the beehive, very quietly, very, very gently. We just kind of eased ourselves in there and we like sat there and like closed our eyes and we were like, I don't know how long we were there, like 15 minutes, half an hour or something, just kind of like sitting there and like with eyes closed and the sunshine and the buzz of the bees, like meditating with the bees and like being with the bees. And it was a transcendental experiencing the kind of, I think it's the collective energy of the bees and just the beautiful, beautiful sound that they make. And that in itself, that energy was vibrational medicine. The sounds that the bees made together, buzzing around and like coming in and out of the beehive was music and had a beauty and a grace all of its own, really.
I must admit, it's one of the things I've really missed. I've noticed it. I noticed it going because I've been in the gardens, really, for many years now. And the hedges used to be alive with bees, but I had a real treat last year in that we have a lot of bumblebees. We've got a massive variety of bumblebees in Mid Wales.
Really?
And they really love the wild raspberries and the wild... they weren't going for any of the cultivated plants. But I actually got 90 minutes of them of record. I put my little voice recorder in amongst them. And I do listen to it. I got 90 minutes. I'll have to let you have a copy. 90 minutes of bees buzzing around the microphone.
I would love 90 minutes of bees buzzing.
I'll tell you what, let's have a quick, let's have a quick music break. Cause I could refreshing my water.
A sip of water. Cool. See you on the other side, Dr. Rock.
Stay on the line and I'll catch up with you. I'll put about 10 minutes of tunes on. Okay, thank you very much, matey.
Thanks, man. Cheers, bye.
You've been listening to Dunk from the Chocolate Love Temple, a most intriguing place in Glastonbury. Glastonbury full of intriguing places, in fact. I'm going to put on 10 minutes or so of tunes so I can go and have a quick refresh. And the first one, I think, is really cracking. Well, both of them are, actually. You get a little bit of educational music, really. This is a thing that came to me this morning by one of my favourite subscriptions to Forbidden Knowledge TV. And it's by a character called Cale Sampson, and it's called Truth Is. It's just over 4 minutes long. You won't have heard me play any rap at all on Dr. Rock's radio show, not necessarily because I don't like it. I have heard some really great stuff, but this man, he really covers the subject matter in 4 minutes. I think he's done a really cracking job. So 10 minutes of tunes coming up. We'll be back with you after that. This is Cale Sampson, and Truth Is.
The truth is that we need to open up our eyes so that we start to see all of the lies that we were told and we believed. Because the time has come to face reality and work together for the sake of liberty, so that our future generation can be free. We need to wake up and see that the truth is not what it appears to be. Truth is, the real reason for war is motivated by money and corporate interest. Rwanda didn't have oil, that's why the world turned a blind eye during its genocide. Truth is, corporations can donate an unlimited amount of money to a candidate. Democrats and Republicans are bought and paid, so government does whatever corporations say. Truth is, the president doesn't run the country. The people in charge are those who control the money, so the Federal Reserve's really more powerful than the US government, and they're running the show. The truth is that Goldman Sachs sold subprime mortgages they knew were bad. They also profited by betting they'd all fail, so they'd win either way and no one went to jail. Truth is, the financial crisis ain't solved. It was a big Ponzi scheme, an inside job, where taxpayers bailed out the banks who caused it in the first place, and now they're still in charge. Truth is, money is created from debt. If all debt was repaid, there'd be no money left. But loans that are made have interest attached that doesn't exist, so we can't pay it back. Truth is, our banking system's a trap that leads to bankruptcy and collapse. It's why the states are $50 trillion in the hole, and this crisis is spreading all around the globe. Truth is, a crash is inevitable, cause our growing debt must be matched in the real world through the use of resources. So infinite growth on a finite planet is impossible. The truth is that we need to open up our eyes so that we start to see all of the lies that we were told and we believed. Because the time has come to face reality and work together for the sake of liberty, so that our future generation can be free. We need to wake up and see that the truth is not what it appears to be. Truth is, the CIA has a history of smuggling drugs into the states. The profits are then laundered through banks in order to help them secretly operate. Cause the truth is, they've been involved in things that would make people appalled, like mind control experiments on soldiers to alter their behavior through drugs and hypnosis. Truth is, Nazis were the first to try putting fluoride into the nation's water supply to dumb people down and control what they think, and now it's in almost all the water that we drink. Truth is, there's a chemical company called Monsanto controlling the food we eat by transforming everything genetically and then forcing everyone to only use their seeds. Truth is that the medical industry is big business with millions of employees. The last thing it wants is a cure for cancer, cause they'd lose trillions if there was ever an answer. Truth is, cures for cancer exist. Just look up Dr. Brzezinski in Texas, who's been curing people with tumors for years. The FDA and the government don't want you to hear. Truth is, you can't trust the TV news. It's pre-filtered to distract and confuse. All the outlets are owned by only five companies, so it's impossible to ever get news objectively. Cause the truth is, people need to wake up and expose how our whole system is corrupt. And if you think I'm wrong, go ahead, try to stump me. Let's see you write a song as smart as this to debunk me. The truth is that we need to open up our eyes so that we start to see all of the lies that we were told and we believed. Because the time has come to face reality and work together for the sake of liberty, so that our future generation can be free. We need to wake up and see that the truth is not what it appears to be. The truth is.
History, the royalty, in ignorance we all obeyed. They told us from God's name their power came, building monuments where we all prayed. And said the royal we depend on me to save you from the hordes abroad. Independency we failed to see, we were dying by their cousin's bloody sword. But as our numbers grew, the royals knew they had to find a better way to keep control of every soul and find a better God to whom we pray. Cause as the years went by, our people died fighting in their family wars. But there were those who cried, we've all been lied to. They've stolen all our land and we're all poor. But it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like that no more. No, it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like that. They saw the human seed was sowed with greed. Many of us price could be bought. The aristocracy would prove, you see, given all the land that they'd also in return to be their military, loaded on the serfs below, who'd be the fodder for their family wars. Work the land that the gentry owned to teach the royal rules. They founded schools for the family trees of aristocracies that came to be corporately by royal charter universities. And from the wide country to the crime cities, the people flocked the likes of you and me, working to their knees in factories or down a deep dark mine where it was hard to see that it didn't have to be like that. It didn't have to be like that no more. No, it didn't have to be like that. It didn't have to be like that no more. Over time, shattered in the form of banks, and from the corporate soul who charged our toll, the aggregate was formed to swell their ranks. And so it came to be society and the system that we serve today, where the life you're shown is what you own, working for the bankster's debts to pay. Keep working hard and play your cards if you wanna win the game. Monopoly for the powers that be, so they don't have to do the bloody same. Yeah, it's a family game in all but name, and the banker always seems to win. While it's austerity for you and me, and you'd better beg their priest to absolve your sins. But it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like that no more. No, it doesn't have to be like, doesn't have to be like that no more. So we were lost at sea to slavery, and our parents never were to know. Gave us his assets free to the company for a certificate of birth receipt to show. And now they feed us news to form our views, done by all the bloody mess. It's never-ending work and servitude, never-ending worry, war and stress. Yeah, we were born and raised to be their slaves, but we're learning how to see the truth. And I'm here to say, don't be that way. Take time to search and you will find the proof, and then you'll find a way to save your day, claim your right to liberty. Say no, be brave, with love behave. Realize that we are all born free. Free your body physically, free your mind, and you will see that you can set your spirit free. Cause it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like that no more. No, it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be like that. I said it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like that no more. No, it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like that.
There we go, slightly more peaceful track after the somewhat frantic rap. Kale Sampson, Truth Is. I do recommend it. I know it can be quite hard to keep your ears on, but it's worth having a listen to, because I admire a good wordsmith, and that man's worked really hard at fitting all of those words into that song. And that was followed by Litmus A. Freeman, a bit of a history lesson from the man at projectfreeman.com. called No More. It doesn't have to be like this no more. And I couldn't agree more with you, Litmus. I'm with you all the way on that one. So we've still got Dunk on the line with us, hopefully, willing to talk food and juices with us. You still there, Dunk? Oh, it's me again. Here we go.
The truth rap.
Yeah, you enjoyed that, did you?
Did you say it was by a guy called Kale?
Yeah, Kale Sampson. Yeah, indeed. Go. Yeah, we've even got...
Truth rap straight from the mouth of Kale.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, we've even got punnage in the music. Whilst, yeah. Just before we went for the break there, we were asked what I think is a very fair question, and one that I have sympathy with living out in the middle of Wales, is that what can we do to take advantage of some of these raw foods and some of these other things if we don't live near anywhere that sells such exotic stuff?
Right. Well, yeah, that's certainly a very good question. I mean, some of the things we covered a little bit earlier, didn't we? For example, something like growing your own wheatgrass is a very good one. Something that I think we may be chatting a little bit about later on, but I'm just going to add it in here, is making your own probiotics. There's a couple of things out there. Is that okay for me to bring that up now?
Yes, why not? Yeah, because it's an interesting part of it. Again, something that I've glanced off several times in the last 5-6 years, but had a chance to try again at your place.
One of the chief ones people may have heard of it is called kombucha, and that is like a oh man, it's weird. It looks kind of like a fungus. Probably people have come across these things. It's like a fungus, but actually it's not a fungus. It's a collection of yeasts.
It's
a collection of yeasts. Yeah, people think it's a mushroom, but it's not actually even a mushroom. It's a bizarre collection of yeasts. My take on kombucha and this other stuff called kefir is I reckon they're extraterrestrial. So I think these are some extraterrestrial superfoods you can put into your diet. And they're very amazing as well, because a little bit like how we were talking about marine phytoplankton earlier in our talk, what's super amazing about the probiotics is they self-replicate. So if you start off with one of these SCOBYs, they're called kombucha SCOBYs, what you do with a kombucha is you have to feed these things. So they're a living collection of yeast and bacteria. And what you do is you feed them in kombucha. You give them either green or black tea. So you make a pot of green or black tea. A lot of people say that the Sencha green tea is very nice, and the kombucha likes that. So you make some tea. You let it cool. You don't want to pour hot water on these kombucha SCOBYs. And then you would say put one of these kombucha SCOBYs in like those glass Kilner jars with a kind of flip top lid and a rubber seal on them. Kilner jars. I generally suggest to people to get themselves at least a 2-liter Kilner jar. When it's like 1 liter, they're a bit small and you're not really making much. So
because what it does, it kind of makes a layer, doesn't it, on the top of the tea, and then it drops one to the bottom of the jar. Is that what it does?
It does, yeah, that's what it means. It grows, it self-replicates. But in that time, you can then make a brew. You can make a kombucha brew. I mean, some research was coming out of, like, these kombuchas. I think they predominantly seem to come from sort of, like, out of Russia and sort of, like, the Soviet Union areas where it's sort of like passed down generation to generation. You know, the secret of long health and longevity were these strange extraterrestrial cultures that they did home brews with. But they're all very brilliant because they're probiotics, and particularly good at regenerating, all the flora in your intestine and colon. They assist in normalizing the pH in your blood. very good for stimulating digestion and metabolism. But one of the key things about both kombucha and kefir is they strengthen your immune system. So, okay, so you can't maybe get hold of what Nick in the chat room was talking about with, that maca and lacuma and stuff. If you can't get hold of those things, or maybe they're pricey or whatever it is, you can empower yourself by making your own medicines, essentially, with these cultures, kombucha and kefir.
And what do you do with the kombucha? Because you presumably don't just drink the old tea that's round it, do you? What do you do with it to turn it into a drink?
Okay, yeah, I didn't quite finish. So you got the kombucha, you got the tea, and then you feed it sugar. You give it sugar. Now, kombucha is a bit of a weird one, because kombucha actually likes the quite white refined sugar. But what it does is then in some kind of process, I don't know exactly process, but a process of transmutation, it basically takes the white sugar and it turns the white sugar into useful probiotics, which are very digestible into our gut wall and are like super beneficial for us.
And you're suggesting it shows a preference for white sugar as opposed to the unrefined cane sugar?
Weirdly enough, the kombucha does, yes. But the other culture, called kefir, that loves... we feed ours on raw sugarcane sugar. Also known, some people also known it as rapadura. But it's raw sugarcane sugar. So the kombucha likes the kind of gaki sugar, the white sugar. But the kefir likes high quality lovely sugar.
It's a different thing, isn't it, the kefir as well? It doesn't look the same, because the
looks more like I say if you imagine what frog spawn looks like but without the little black dot in it, it's more like a little collection of frog spawn looking stuff. But it rapidly replicates itself. And the kefir is interesting because kefir contains lots of nutrients. It contains vitamins A, D, K, B2 and B12. Also minerals, calcium and magnesium, amino acids and enzymes. And many of these are lacking. These nutrients are lacking due to sort of unhealthy lifestyles. And it also contains strains of probiotics. And these are the things that... aids in digestion and aids in the breakdown of bad cells through poor nutrition and pollution. So kefir and kombucha, they almost act, well, not almost, they do act like natural, although they're probiotics, they act like natural antibiotics. So rather than going to a doctor and dosing yourself up on low, let's say you've got like a cold or something, rather than going to the doctor and getting loads of antibiotics, you'd be better off drinking loads of kefir and kombucha in probiotics.
So the thing is that you can actually build yourself up a kind of defense, can't you, in advance, by, so you don't just have to use it if you've actually got something wrong with you, by using it when you're
right.
Well.
That's right, Dr. Yeah. Rock. That's really true. No, this is something that you use as a preventative medicine. You know, this is a drink that you can have every day, totally, and then you won't get to a situation when you've got like coughs, colds, flus, whatever bug or weird belief system that people believe that they might have is like going round, you know.
So you had this stuff kind of in, it was like in a beer bottle, wasn't it? And it was slightly fizzy and all of that.
Yes.
And how do you make it like go like that? Because that's not what it looks like in the jar, mate.
I mean, there is, like with anything, there's a learning curve, a bit of a knack to it. It's good to, a lot of these cultures generally don't like getting too cold. So if you're in a cold place, dropping much below around 15 degrees centigrade, it doesn't like them. So if you've got like, lots of people put them in the airing cupboard. If you've got an airing cupboard, is a good place to put them. I don't have an airing cupboard, at home. But one handy hint, if you do get into making your own kefir and kombucha, you can actually buy, you know, from like those brewing companies, you can buy like a little heat pad, which they're low wattage, low electric usage heating pads. And you can have one of those, and then that keeps your brew a good temperature, because they tend to prefer temperatures between around 17 to around 27, 30 degrees.
Yeah.
These cultures, they don't like getting cold, because when they get cold, they kind of go into stasis and then just kind of like don't really do much. And then you're like going, what's going on with my culture? It's like not doing anything. And you're like, yeah, it's kind of gone into stasis.
But they kind of, you have to treat them quite badly to kill them, don't you? How do you spell kefir?
Well, like, throw them on the wall. Use them. Kefir, you spell kefir, K-E-F-I-R.
K-E-F-I-R.
Yeah, K-E-F-I-R. Okay. It's a really good one, kefir. And kefir is easier for beginners. For beginners, I say, if you're a beginner home brewer, of probiotics for health, then I'd say go for kefir. That's a good one. That's a good one to start with. And then maybe when you feel a bit more advanced or a bit more adventurous, like check out a kombucha SCOBY. But I just want to get back to the question that the guy in the chat room asked.
Yeah.
Talking about, So say you're living off grid, you haven't really got access to supermarkets. So the next best thing I would say is like buy in bulk, buy wholesale where you can. So say get an account with one of those places like Essential Foods, Infinity Foods, those kind of guys. One good strategy I've found to set up a wholesale account with them is you just phone them up and you say, I'm running a cafe and I'd like to set up a wholesale account. And usually they're quite helpful and friendly if you want to do that. And then that means that you can buy your seeds in bulk. So then you can say like order hemp seed, sunflower seed, pumpkin seed. Another one that I quite like is for soaking and sprouting is black rice. People think that that's a grain, but I think it's actually a seed. I'm just trying to think of other things. So strategy number one when you're living out in the sticks is like buy in bulk. Obviously make sure that you store your nuts and seeds. Nuts is another good one as well, like buy in bulk, buy some nuts in bulk. And then you want to make sure obviously that they're stored well. So like getting some like good locking containers for them so that they don't get like any molds or anything getting in there, because that's one thing when you buy in wholesale and you buy bulk, you want to make sure that you look after the things that you buy.
Yeah, my recent experience has been that it's a good idea to try and keep them in metal containers if you can, because if you have a large amount of such things, occasionally you will attract mice.
That's why I'm saying they got to like stay in lockdown kind of containers. And then soaking the seeds and sprouting the seeds. I mean, you were saying yourself, you know, like you can quite successfully sprout things. Sprouting is fun. It's enjoyable. You can do it in a jam jar with a piece of muslin and an elastic band over the top of it. But one mistake a lot of people make is they leave the seeds soaking for too long in water and then they go a bit manky.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually probably online check out, because different seeds and nuts sometimes require different amounts of soaking time. So it's good to get hold of like a table. I'm pretty sure you can get them online, like a soaking table, because some things need to be soaked for a lot longer than other things.
Yeah.
The other one as well, I don't know, I'm a bit on the fence with mung beans. I've read different reports on the benefits of mung beans and as to how digestible. Ones that I definitely would recommend to steer clear of, sprouting a chickpeas. I would not bother sprouting chickpeas because they're just rancid and toxic and not good not really good. Even sprouted chickpeas are not a good thing to do, really. So I wouldn't recommend chickpeas.
I didn't know. What you got against chickpeas?
What have I got? Am I dissing chickpeas, man? Well, because they've got, I'm pretty sure they have they're toxic. They've got a toxic chemical in them.
Right.
So they're you're like really taxing your digestive system to digest these things. So again, like another raw strategy is, you want to be creating the least, you want to be creating a healthy gut, healthy bacteria. That's why the probiotics are so important, because it's creating a healthy gut, an alkaline state. So when you're eating things like, say, alfalfa and sunflower seeds sprouted and pumpkin seeds sprouted, those kind of things, they're creating an alkaline environment in your body. And that's, in fact, that's one of the core principles behind raw food and living food. Is a lot of people, the strategy is alkalize your body as much as possible. And that's what dark green foods do, sprouting does, juicing does, supplementing with superfoods does. It's all about creating an alkaline environment in your body, because disease can only incubate in an acidic environment. And if you're eating a lot of starchy, high saturated foods in your body, you're creating you're creating an acidic environment. What you want to do is you want to switch that and create an alkaline environment in your body.
Yeah, because one
of the concepts and principles of living foods and raw foods is create an alkaline environment.
Right, because I had heard that was there's a tendency to believe that we need different things for different things, but I hear that alkalizing the body is a good all-round kind of helpful thing to be doing.
Definitely, alkalizing is a good strategy.
There's a question in the chat box. I've been asked to ask you about nettles. There's lots of people talking about nettles in the chat box. Got anything good to say about nettles?
Nettles are like, nettles are absolutely, they're fantastic. They're very highly mineralized. So we were talking about fulvic minerals earlier in the show as a supplement. Nettles is a close substitute to mineralizing. The way that I have nettles, which is good, is like when you get the young nettles, they're sprouting out, you get your fingers, and what you do is like you make like a little triangle with your thumb and your first two fingers, and you pluck the top, you like reach into a stinging nettle. You pluck the top out of the stinging nettle, and then you roll it round into a little ball. So you're making like a little half a centimeter round ball. You roll it around, get a bit of moisture in it like that, like the on the stinging nettle top. And then you pop that in your mouth and chew it at the back of your mouth on your molars. And you like chew that stinging nettle.
Oh, wow. You're eating them raw, man.
Yeah. You just pluck them and eat them in the location where you pluck them, you must eat them.
Right. Well, of course, I suppose that's the thing. If you're going to eat them raw, you might as well eat them as fresh and close to the plant as you can.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is you pluck them and then you, as I said, you like make a little ball out of them, and then you like, get a bit of saliva with them and just chew on them. And then you can like tack, 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 you can like eat, 10, 15 of them. And that would be like a good dose of like of natural minerals, natural wild minerals, free.
Well, I've certainly not tried that. I must admit, I've had them in mash, I've had them in soup, I've had them as tea.
Cool. There's a new way to check out how to have your stinging nettles. Then
plenty of them around here. Synchro actually gathered a gallon of dried nettle seeds a couple of years ago, and we're still working our way through them. They're apparently really good for you too.
That was one thing when we hung out together in your diet. One of the things that bounced out that I learned from chatting with you is that you were having the nettle seeds, and seeds are great because seeds, essentially, when we think about seeds, you know, seeds have all the potential for the life force. But that's why you soak and sprout a seed, because you soak and sprout a seed because when you soak the seeds, as opposed to just eating them dry, as opposed to eating them unsoaked, yeah? So say you take some almonds, a handful of almonds, you can eat the almonds dry, which is okay, it's quite good, but it's better to soak those almonds. Usually almonds are a good one to sort of soak for about 4-8 hours or so, I think. When you soak the almonds, obviously, you know, the almonds are then thinking, ooh, I'm going to start growing now. And then they throw out that energetic field to the universe that, oh, I'm going to start sprouting. And then the universal life force enters those sprouts. And so then they become living and live and vital, rather than a seed, an almond, which, yes, it's raw, but it's not containing as much like life force and prana in it until it's actually been given the element of water, which activates it.
Everything needs water to grow, doesn't it? And soaking it, even if it hasn't sprouted or anything, you've kind of turned on its growth thing, and it makes it a lot more, like hundreds of times better for you, as far as I can gather, as the unsoaked thing.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It really does. It makes a big difference to its vital life force. Its vitality, its prana, its energy is in sometimes multiplied 100, 200, 300 fold in the nutritional benefits that that your body can glean from a sprouted seed over one that hasn't been sprouted.
So in terms of actually... in terms of having to live kind of in a remote place, then building a supply of things that you can sprout has got to be pretty much up there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, sprouting, and then you just covered, you know, a bit of like foraging, as we've discussed a bit in the show already, like, you know, foraging. So getting yourself a couple of books on you know, clearly identifying the, you know, things that are edible out in nature. I mean, another one that I love is sort of like rose hips and stuff. Wow, they're really yummy, man, if you like find a nice rose hip tree. I mean, again, they're red berries, so you got to know what your red berry is, because you don't want to be chowing down on some like red berries on the wrong tree.
Now, we've got some lovely rose hip cordial this year that Synchro made. Very nice.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, because rose hips and so, yeah, so identifying some wild foods. And then, as you say, you know, getting into a bit of if you don't have a garden, and say like you just even like live in a flat or something, like you can still successfully grow things in pots. I mean, last year. Okay, they're not going to totally sustain me, but I, like, because it was so sunny, I successfully grew quite a lot of spinach in a pot, and some kale, but in particular chilies. I had lots of success last summer with like growing loads and loads of chilies.
Yeah, we've had some good success with chilies. We grew some cayenne peppers as well. That was a good thing to have pulled off. We got a really good crop of them.
Boom. Well, there you go. See, cayenne pepper, that's something that we put in our elixir. Cayenne pepper, it's like, cayenne pepper is just, that's an amazing, incredible, it's like right up there in the top 10 superfoods is cayenne pepper. So, you know, so you can grow, you know, you can be empowered and grow your own superfoods.
And once again, it's you know, it's not realistic to expect to go from growing nothing to growing everything, but kind of doing one thing at a time. And personally, I'd recommend growing chilies and cayenne peppers and stuff, because most people have got a windowsill that you can get away with that. And as you said, that's one of the things we quite often start the day with, a glass of kind of blood temperature water with lemon juice and cayenne pepper in it.
Nice, yeah, lemon juice. Yeah, I like throwing some ginger in the morning drink, lemon juice, ginger, and we maybe cheat a bit sometimes and have a little bit of super healthy enzyme honey in there. Although an interesting thing with honey and heat is it's a good thing to let any drink. If you're someone that's like substituting honey in your hot drinks, it's a good thing to let your drink get sort of like close to kind of blood temperature, which you can like ascertain by just popping your finger in your drink. It's good to not put honey in drinks that are too hot, because that also can like kind of like make honey, some honeys are somewhat carcinogenic, which a lot of people don't know that about honey, putting honey in hot drinks.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Talking about honey, have we got any human friendly replacements for sugar? I know the unrefined stuff's better than the refined stuff, but are there any other things we can use for sugar?
So sugars, let's have a little think about sugars. I mean, obviously, like one thing, if you're talking sugars, then obviously any kind of like freshly squeezed fruit juice is going to give you those the sugars that maybe if you're having like a bit of a sugar craving, that would probably be one of my first things to go for. But then after that, I mean, what we use here in the chocolates, at the Chocolate Love Temple, we use, as I mentioned before, Yakon syrup. And then in some things we use maple syrup is quite a good, I feel quite a good sugar substitute. It's not strictly a raw food item. But I do feel like when you get a good grade maple syrup, again, it's very nutritious and it's got the minerals in it, and it just makes everything taste really yummy. Maple syrup, I think.
Have you ever tried birch syrup? That's just come up as a kind of, cause that again, birch are local. Have you ever tried that?
I think I have tried some birch syrup, but yeah, certainly any kind of, tree syrups. Tree syrups of any description, really. I think that a sweet would be a good one.
Because doesn't xylitol come from birch syrup?
It does. Yeah, xylitol is birch. It might be birch bark. I'm not totally sure.
Oh right, okay. But
I'm not 100% sure on xylitol. It could be a syrup. It could be a bark. But I think you're correct in saying that xylitol is from. From birch. But interestingly, birch is what the medicinal mushrooms grow on. And birch are amazing trees, because I recently found out that birch trees are known as the nurse trees of the forest. So if a forest, sometimes a forester, if a forest is suffering from a certain kind of like disease or demineralization in the soil, and this often I've heard that they'll plant birch trees in the forest to help regenerate the forest.
Yes, they're kind of pioneer trees that in there with the ash and the things, they kind of move in and start sheltering the place for the bigger trees to grow, I think.
Right, cool. Yeah, they're cool. And they're beautiful as well. Silver birch are beautiful trees.
They are, yeah, and they don't live so long as the bigger trees like your oak and the rest of them, as far as I gather. There was a question in the chat box a while back asking whether you had anything to say about garlic.
Chat box, garlic.
Yeah,
again, garlic, fantastic natural antibiotic. I'm just trying to think about, all I know, I haven't studied garlic that extensively, but I do know, like adding garlic, you know, into your, having it as a, in raw and maybe like crushing it, you can like add garlic into juices as well if you're having like a vegetable juice. But certainly having your garlic, I would say have the garlic raw, rather than like cooking it, or you know, sometimes people put it in roasts and stuff, don't they, in their little shells. And I do know that it tastes very yummy like that. I have to agree, it does taste yummy. But again, to get the like antibacterial properties from garlic, garlic contains something called allicin in the garlic, and that has been proven to be a great natural antibiotic again, back to that kind of like nature's natural antibiotics. Because essentially, all the answers are in nature. We don't really need to have doctors and go and get prescribed, you know, chemical pharmaceutical drugs for things that are going on in our bodies. Lots of the answers can be found very close to home.
Yeah, yes, indeed, because we make a lot of this stuff inside ourselves, don't we? And I'd just like to return to the subject of the probiotics as well, because they can, because people sometimes feel, don't they, sort of obliged or manoeuvred by family or one way or the other, find it difficult to resist antibiotics if something pretty bad's going on.
No, I understand
or
that.
Or they're having dental work. But the probiotics can help offset the bad effects of the antibiotics, can't they?
Yeah, take them alongside antibiotics, definitely. Yeah, you can take antibiotics and probiotics together.
So you'd have
because
your,
the antibiotics in my understanding, the antibiotics do strip us of all the natural, you know, the healthy flora and fauna in our digestive tract. The antibiotics kind of strip us of that. So the probiotics are really good at regenerating that.
So you'd literally you'd take like a dose of your kombucha for every dose of the antibiotics you take or something like that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're not well, drink and even if you're on a prescription of antibiotics, alongside your antibiotics, be drinking kefir and probiotics. And you can get in natural encapsulated form as well. You can get probiotics as well. You don't have to necessarily be making kombucha and kefir.
No, but the advantage of the kombucha and the kefir is that you can have it kind of growing all the time, can't you?
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I mean, yeah, because it is, it's a lot of these things, they're kind of like, they're strategies for a new earth, aren't they? You know, in ways of like ideas to, you know, how to get off grid and how to be like living more in essentially living more in harmony with nature. And the way in which we can begin to achieve some of those objectives is by making our own natural medicines.
Yeah.
Because it's our divine right to do that. It's totally our divine right. And don't let anybody tell you that, oh, you shouldn't be making a tincture or you shouldn't be creating this, because like it's our right to make our own medicines and to be able to like heal ourselves.
Yes, because make no mistake, they are now telling us what we can and cannot make, and indeed even what we can and cannot grow, apparently, so I'm told.
So,
anyway.
Even more reason to do it.
Yeah, quite so.
You know, that is how I feel, is like, you know, we are our own natural herbalists and things. I mean, there's a good example, what you're saying there is like, for example, something like melatonin, which is actually... We're natural melatonin factories. We secrete melatonin out of our pineal glands, you know, as we're like going into those hours just before sleep. And I think in the UK, melatonin is a regulated, or you can maybe only get melatonin on a prescription or something. Yet I'm sure it's really easy to go and get to get some kind of like weird long named sleeping pill whose name you can't even pronounce.
Yeah, and yeah, we had a lady called Serena Roney Dougal on the line on the show from she's based in Glastonbury too, and she was saying that they have recently discovered, I mean, it's been a long time since they found traces of melatonin and DMT that comes from the melatonin. They found it in the brain, but now she says they've shown pretty conclusively that the melatonin serotonin cycle produces DMT in the pineal.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, these are things that our bodies, as a natural chemical factory, produce, and then politicians say, "Oh, you know, they're banned substances," and you're like, "That's ridiculous! You'd have to ban everybody. You'd have to ban people from going to sleep, because you're going to be producing melatonin, which is an illegal substance."
That's right. You're nicked, mate. Yeah.
You're nicked, mate. You're producing melatonin. So, yeah, it's do it. Just do it.
I think so, yeah, indeed. So do you make tinctures as well?
I've made some tinctures, yeah. I have experimented with both the chaga tinctures and reishi tinctures. And it's again, it's another really fun thing, but you can do it with, like, you can go and get, like, I mean, in England we've got quite a lot of mushrooms that you can collect, like the turkey tail, for example, is an interesting one.
I've not heard of that one. I've had a few wild mushrooms in my time. I've not come across the turkey tail. I'll have to get up on that one.
It looks like a turkey tail, actually. But yeah, you can get these kind of like mushrooms that growing on trees. Again, I'm talking more about the mushrooms that grow on trees rather than ground mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be more of the more things like the chaga contains something called betulin in it, which is, again, which is like assists in boosting the immune system, and I think it regulates hormones as well. It's like a cystinoid hormone regulator. But the chaga has also been used. The chaga has been used in cases where people have had different levels of cancer in their body, like the wheatgrass, and have had success curing themselves of cancers in the body through the chaga and the reishi mushrooms. And what a tincture is usually, most tinctures, they're basically, I mean, you can make, for example, like a water tincture and an alcoholic extract, but water tinctures are still very strong. And that's, you just like kind of like brewing up a brew of the, for example, the chaga, and brewing it up, making a nice brew of chaga, and then keeping that, and then bottling that, and making it with spring water, of course, and then bottling that, and then sort of, you know, taking sort of like 30 drops of the brew that you've made a day, and then that makes it easier. You don't necessarily have to be thinking, oh, I've got to make a tea every day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can make one big batch of it, bottle it up, and then sort of, you know, give yourself little, say, I don't know, 50 mil bottles or something, and then, you know, take a bottle a week or something like this.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed, good way of doing it. It's amazing what's out there, isn't it? I mean,
what we'd really like
to see is people kind of actually out there making a business of growing the mushrooms and distributing them and stuff. You know, because if they do grow here, it'd be great to have people specialised in doing that kind of stuff. And isn't it amazing?
I think there are some people do the shiitake and stuff, I think. And you can get, like, you can buy inoculation kits that you can... They're like little plugs that you plug in, that you tap into.
Turkey oak, I saw the shiitake growing in.
Okay, yeah, shiitake is a good, really, really good one.
Actually, you reminded me of a guy that I did meet up in North Wales. There's a bloke there who's got three or four kind of old lorry containers on the edge of a wood, and he's growing three or four different sorts of mushrooms.
Really?
There. Yeah, he's growing oyster mushrooms, field mushrooms.
Let's go visit him. That sounds cool.
I did, yeah, I think I should, actually. I think I should go and talk to him, because apparently once you start him talking about growing mushrooms, you can't stop him, and I think I'd really like to grow mushrooms, actually.
If you've got space and you're out in the woods and stuff, I think it would be quite a satisfying project, wouldn't it, to sprout the mushrooms, and then you... harvest them, and then you could dry them in a dehydrator. I mean, that's another pretty cool piece of kit in living foods, although maybe a pricier bit of kit, but it keeps crunching.
They're not too pricey to buy, and one of the things I like about them is they ain't too pricey to run, are they, generally?
No, not as much as a cooker. I think a cooker would use more electricity than a dehydrator, because a dehydrator is just a fan spinning.
Yeah, that's right, and quite a small fan at that, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, do you think that we covered the question that I think it was Nick made?
It was Mahatma Coates was the one who asked about living out in the... I think we made a few suggestions.
We talked about living foods, we talked about wheatgrass, we talked about... wholesale. We talked about sprouting, kefir and kombucha,
making tinctures.
Yeah, making tinctures, foraging. Just trying to think if there's anything that I can think of that I've maybe like left out. Oh, I know. Well, obviously, one thing that you did say that we might like to mention, and this would be especially good if you do live out in the sticks, is probably, if you do live out in the sticks, you probably already do this anyway. But I mean, spring water in your diet's fantastic, and if you are drinking tap water, don't stop drinking tap water, because that's seriously toxic.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, quite. And it remembers all the things that have been done to it. I mean, again, we did have a lady called Julie Rocker on the show saying that, you know, even if you do have tap water, there's things you can do to it to make it better for you.
Sure.
I mean, you're in a pretty luxurious position, really, in Glastonbury, aren't you? Because you've got a lot of springs that are still publicly accessible around there. More than you'd like at the moment, I suspect.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like half of it's underwater. Yeah, there's some really good springs. There's a few lovely springs in the area. Obviously, you've got the red and white springs, and they're good. The only thing in this area is there's quite a high level of calcium in the water, so it's not. And you don't really want to be putting a lot of calcium in your water. So I am currently actually trying to researching to see what are some good kind of like filter strategies. And there's something, Vortex Water, I've come across, where sort of I think it's based on some of the work of I believe Buckminster Fuller.
And Walter and Schauberger, Victor Schauberger.
Oh, maybe Schauberger, sorry, yeah. It's either it's Buckminster Fuller was doing geodomes, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think you're right, it's Victor Schauberger and the way in which water flows and the natural flow of water. But spring water and also, you know, like washing in spring water is like wonderfully invigorating as well, you know, and cleaning and I've studied some Kundalini yoga and Yogi Bhajan in Kundalini yoga. He would teach that it's like one of the best things in the morning to get up and have cold water on your body, because that kind of like really kicks your immune system and your nervous system into gear. And especially if it's cold spring water, even better.
Yes. Yeah. Certainly feels good on the face when you get it. Do you think it's a good idea if you're drinking from spring water to try and vary the springs that you're drinking from?
Yeah, I think that is a good thing to do. Yeah, because you're having different minerals and things in the water and varying it, I think, is a good idea. I mean, have you got lots of springs near you out in Wales?
There's not too many. It's all kind of fairly boggy round where we are, but there we've been to lots of places in Wales where there are springs.
And yeah, a
friend of mine who trades out of lay-bys says he knows where there's a water source near everywhere, you know, within walking distance of everywhere where he stops. There's certainly a lot of it around at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some people are really good with springs. I had a friend and he could spot a spring. He could spot a spring flipping like half a mile off. He could just like eyeball the lay of the land and go, "Oh, there's one over there," and then we'd like go off looking for the spring and stuff.
Because it's funny, isn't it? They do have a thing called the spring line in Wales, and it's where the old long houses were actually established. The older farms were all established on a spring line, which kind of runs halfway up a hill. So you kind of your animals could be kept down by the river in the winter, and then up in the hills in the summer, and you were sort of crouched on the waterline all the year round.
Brilliant. I mean, yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because before we had taps and running water and that kind of stuff, then we would have had to have situated ourselves always close to a drinking water source that was easily accessible.
Yes, I mean, so there's some of that old, some of the old architecture for that still apparent around here. There's still a place called the Argoid Mill, which actually still has the kind of lake, the pond that the water would have run into. It's still got the mill building, and still got bits of the mill race, and it used to generate electricity for the place, you know, for the estate. And it's all sitting there and you think, my God, that would be so good to use all of that, to have the water for drinking and the power off it that it gets, because it doesn't rob anything from the river or the stream, does it?
Can you go and chat to the owner?
Yeah, we know the people that live in there and the people that own it, and I think it's all just too expensive for anybody to contemplate. But really? I just look at it and I think there's so much potential. This is the trouble, isn't it? We're all kind of somehow separated from... There's a lot of people here, I think, who'd like to see a project like that undertaken, but it would take either a lot of effort or a lot of meaningless promissory tokens to get it done, and nobody can match the will with the cash, as it were.
Mm.
Though I think the time's going to come again when people, anybody that can generate more electricity than they need and so just move it through the micro net to the next person along, that's going to be the way to do it. I'd love to see it done that way, because then we'd have more electricity than we needed, I reckon.
Yeah, that would be great to see more electricity created with water.
Yeah. So do you drink a lot of water? How much water do you generally get through in a day?
I drink a lot of chocolate elixir currently. yeah, I do. I would say I drink... I probably actually don't drink probably as much as I could do. But, I mean, I think probably... I mean, my body weight isn't that big, so I probably drink, a fair bit of kefir as well at the moment, actually. And water, I would say, like a pint and a half.
Yeah.
Which probably isn't maybe necessarily enough.
It has been one of my big discoveries, is that drinking more water certainly has helped me and Synchro. And we tend to drink a couple of pints when we get up in the morning, and then try and get through another couple during the day.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is a good strategy.
But so it's amazing how many people out there who don't seem to drink any water at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, sometimes you do need to be reminded of the basics. And I think, as you're like highlighting there, drinking water and keeping your body hydrated is great, because our bodies are water, aren't they? We're liquid beings, primarily like 75-80% liquid. So keeping ourselves hydrated allows your body to be fluid and allows you to keep you in the, you know, creative flow of your life. So definitely, I definitely agree but sometimes we just need to be reminded of that. Sometimes it's the simple things. Oh, drink more water, but yeah, certainly drink more water, but drink more good water.
The better the water. I think the better the water can be, the better. But at the same time, drinking water is what's really required, but whatever level you can get it. I think it'd be really great to see the fluoride removed from the water, but then I think about the mains water systems and just how they're being, excuse me a moment. I don't think I can mute my mic when you're kind of on the line with me. It's amazing how the water's being destroyed, but at the same time, Emoto's shown that you can, in fact, water is really magical stuff, the way it seems to remember things and take on things from its environment and express them through itself. So what Julie Rocker was saying was, look, okay, mate, if you're left with tap water, then at least filter it, spin it round in the glass a little bit, give it a bit of love and gratitude, because it's been shown that it responds well to love and gratitude, and all of those things would up the quality of the water you're drinking from whatever its base quality was, and at least you're drinking the water. And I think that it does seem to me that, like I say, lots of people I come across drink no water at all. Plenty of beer, maybe instant coffee, things like that. Stuff that actually dehydrates them.
Yes, certainly. Certainly, if you don't have access to water, then you have to, you know, use the means that you do have. And that just reminds me of of a saying, and it basically goes, I transmute all poisons and pollutions into positive life-enhancing chi. So ultimately, beyond all the nutrition and beyond all of it, we are the creators that can transmute things that are possibly toxic to us in, you know, into that which is light and energizing.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yep. And it does seem that we can do that. I've one of my favorite reference books is called Timeless Secrets of Age of Health and Rejuvenation by Andreas Moritz. And he gives loads and loads of details as to, and I think it's in the Healing with Whole Foods book as well, lots and lots of really good advice on what can keep you well, what can make you ill and all of that. But I think he says somewhere, at the end he says, if you've got a really bad attitude, not even the best diet in the world is going to save you. And by the same token, if you've got the right attitude, then not even the worst diet in the world's going to kill you. And that shows how important our mind and our intent and everything are to this particular subject, I think.
Yeah, it does. It does. That is a facet of nutrition, is your own mind and emotional space as well. Because, exactly as you're highlighting, it's important to imbue whatever you have got in front of you with, as you say, you know, with like love and gratitude, and when you imbue it with that, you can help transmute it, and simultaneously, you know, alongside that, make the healthiest choices that you can do within your the circumstances that you find yourself.
And I think, do you know what, I think that probably includes trying to mix with and eat with people that are happy and cheerful, rather than people who are disappointed and full of hate, because I think that can make a difference to the food as well.
And miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty deep in our community and society, it's a collective communal experience, you know, eating with friends and family and stuff like that, and that is emotionally nourishing in itself as well, isn't it? You know, when you have a lovely meal and a lovely experience with a group of people, that can be nourishing. So I was just saying that you don't necessarily want to ostracize yourself.
No, I really love eating with other people. It's one of my favorite hobbies nowadays.
Good hobby.
Yeah, cooking and eating food with other people. We quite often find ourselves at kind of gatherings of people who are going to sing or do something or other, and quite often we have everybody brings a dish, and you get these amazing feasts out of it. You get far more food than everybody's capable of eating, and a really big variety. I really enjoy them.
Yeah, I mean, Glastonbury is a great place for... We have had a few, and there are a few kind of like raw food potlucks and stuff. And just last week I went to my friend's, she just turned two, and it was like a little raw birthday party for a 2-year old.
Really?
with loads of like yummy raw food things. And a friend made, in fact, it was my friend Free that's got the hemp shop. He made a raw durian cake, which was pretty crazy flavours.
That'd be quite an interesting way of introducing perhaps grown-ups who don't necessarily like the idea of raw food.
Well, invite them to a children's birthday party.
To a sort of, a raw food for 2-year-olds.
Yeah, that would work, man. That would definitely work.
One of the things we wanted to talk, because we're coming up to the point where I'll put on a couple of tunes towards the end of the show.
But okay,
One of the things we wanted to talk about was zeolites, which was a completely new word to me. What's a zeolite?
Zeolites. Okay, well, zeolites are pretty interesting. They've been, they're a traditional medicine, and they're, primarily, I think they were discovered in Russia. And zeolite has an ability to remove toxins from the body. Basically, when you remove all the toxins, the body's allows the body's magnesium to store and function properly. And that increases ATP and provides us more energy to our cells and therefore to us. So it's very, it's a detoxifier, essentially.
Where do we get these things and how do we take them?
Well, zeolites are interesting. Zeolites are created, in my understanding, when volcanic lava flows down from a volcano and then it hits the ocean. And then, so interestingly, with the element of fire and water connecting, it creates zeolites. They're kind of like a clay. The closest, if the listeners might know, the closest kind of thing maybe people have come across is something like a bentonite clay, which is sometimes used in cleanses for pulling heavy metals out of the body. I mean, they've even been used in areas where people have been exposed to high levels of radiation. I believe that they were used in, I think it was after, not Hiroshima, the Russian meltdown, I'm pretty sure that they used zeolites in the cleanup operation after Chernobyl.
Ah, right. So that's interesting. I remember reading in one of Jeremy Narby's books, I think it was called Intelligence in Nature, and he writes about a bunch of parrots in the Amazon, and they're specific. There's lots and lots of parrots there, but this particular brand of Amazonian parrot knows to eat a given grade of clay from a cliff that is near where it lives. And as a result, this particular brand of parrot can eat many more, much more poisonous seeds than all the other parrots, because it's apparently managing to evacuate the poisons exactly as you describe. And he knows which sort of clay to go to get that effect precisely.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. So they're really good to have if you're doing a detox. Then zeolites are a really great thing to add into your diet. So yeah, zeolites. I mean, we have zeolites here at the Chalky Love Temple. We've got zeolites in powdered form, and we have zeolites in liquid form. They're essentially a clay, but they can be, depending, that some different zeolites have a different micron size. And if you go down to 0.3 mean micron size, which is like uber tiny, then they can actually enter your bloodstream, and you can actually assist in like cleaning your blood with zeolites. So they're a very powerful detoxification tool, I suppose you could.
I guess as well as trying to put good, I mean, no matter how hard we try to put only good things in at this stage in the game, there's going to be other gubbins finding its way in there. And I think an element of detox is probably a good thing to be practicing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Even if you just do one day a week, or, you know, or even one day a month where you just don't eat all day and you do a bit of fasting. And as you say, you drink water, you know, do a bit of exercise, keep it fairly simple, but certainly like it's really great to give your digestive system a break. It's very healthy and very healing to give your digestive system a break. Otherwise, if you're eating every single day of your life, when are you giving these systems in your body, a bit of time to regenerate and recuperate?
Now, that is something that I definitely haven't tried, is fasting. I wonder if I probably could nowadays. Now I'm eating a lot less, and my food eating is a lot, got less obsession about it, really, you know,
Jimmy
chips and all that. I wonder if I could try it. Probably, actually, since I've got used to drinking a lot more water, I reckon I probably could manage it. Perhaps I should give it a go. I have never tried not eating for a whole day.
You haven't?
No.
It's actually not that. It actually sounds a lot trickier than it actually ends up being. But certainly I could give you more advice on that. I don't think I want to necessarily delve into fasting, because that in itself is like it's a pretty vast topic.
Well, it had never occurred to me to even try it before, so perhaps that's on that kind of occurrence, perhaps it's as good a place as any to draw the chat to a close, I think.
Okay.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks, Dunk.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Rock.
Do you want us to remind us of any website addresses you've got that people might like to go and find out more about you and what you do?
Oh, yeah, that would be sound. Well, we're here at the Chocolate Love Temple, so it's just www.chocolateloveTemple.com. Most of the things that we've been talking about today, especially superfoods and stuff, we've got lots of yummy superfoods. And if you're in Glastonbury, we're at the top of the high street on the right, just next to the bead shop. And do come and visit us, and you could come and try some of our delicious chocolate elixir.
I really, really definitely recommend the chocolate elixir. That is really, really...
Dr. Rock's tried it.
Yeah, I'll be back for more pretty shortly. You can bet on that. And the chocolates are really nice as well. I brought a little bag of chocolates back here, and I'll tell you, they went down a storm with the people in the woods. I will be expecting. Yeah. They were really popular. People were having a bite each out of one and things like that. And
sweet, sharing them. That's cool. Yeah.
Thanks
very much for inviting me onto your show. It's been really lovely, and thanks to all the listeners for dialing in tonight. And many blessings, and I think as the rapper said, live your truth, man.
Yeah, live your truth. Well, thanks very much for being here and sharing yours with us, Dunk. I really appreciate
Yay.
That.
And, thank you. It's been fun.
I'll just put on a tune and I'll catch up with you on the Skype whilst it's playing for all of you out of there. That was Duncan from the Chocolate Love Temple in Glastonbury, covering a lot of ground, I thought, and this is Smiling Ivy playing Gagging Order. Oh, yes.
Corrosive liquid on the soul, select a Yeshua. Doesn't need a health bar and your new car. Doesn't need a mini bar. It's what you need to the little touch of leaf and more loophole. The rich get hot. And there's a cold confession. There's a pot warm, a hole around a campfire outside the temple. Spenny Benny's wise, you respect the hierarchy. No end bombs explode, they liberate soul. Short-lived, need a scandal, satisfy the next fix. Spreading the disease, I can
liberate the soul. really know how it think you know. Really know how it really know.
When they want to think it's just a puppy show.
Completely amazing Horace X there with Puppet Show from Strategy. And before that, because you didn't get any last week, you got some this week. Motorhead, Rock and Roll, Lemmy, of course, maintaining that we don't need any of these greens or Colorado or any of that sort of stuff. That if you got Rock and Roll, then that ain't too bad, and I tend to agree with him. You've been listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on peoplesinternetradio.com. I've been speaking with Dunk from the exotic Wii Emporium on the High Street in Glastonbury, the chocolate love temple where I personally intend to be spending a bit more of my time checking out the goat's cheese and the various other things that are available there. So coming up, something else. I'll be back again next week. I'm going to leave you with another little cracker from that came to me from Forbidden Knowledge TV. It's a lady called Josie Outlaw. I'll post the link into the chat box on my way out. It's called Who Owns You? Every now and then I hear something that I think is it bang on the mark. That little Truth Is Rap was one such thing earlier on. I think Litmus Is No More was another. And I think Josie Outlaw and Who Owns You is another. This is one I shall be playing to many people, and I'm sure you'll be hearing it on this show again. I'll see you all next week, folks. Thanks to everybody involved for letting me be here, and the people that rebuilt the computer earlier this week, and the fact I've got 12 volt electricity now, so I've got a couple of boxes, great big boxes of 12 volt power. So now I'm going to be able to listen to the radio more, and it's really great. Thanks to you, most of all, for being there. For sure, the light at the end of the tunnel is us, and here's Josie.
To whom does your life belong? Who owns you? Most people instinctively answer, I own myself. But most people don't actually believe that. What does it mean to own something? It means that you and you alone have the right to decide what is done with that thing. What is yours you can use, you can trade, you can give away, you can destroy. So what does it mean to say you own yourself? It means that you and you alone have the right to decide what is done with your body and your mind, with your time and your energy. If someone else had the right to decide what is done with your body and your mind, your time and your energy, then he would be your owner and you would be his slave. So, are you anyone's slave? Do you pay taxes? Do you feel obligated to obey whatever the politicians decide to call law? Do you imagine that someone else has the right to control you, to rule you? Do you vote? In every political election, you are asked to decide who you want owning you, but owning yourself is never one of the options offered. The only choice you are given is the choice of which politicians will coerce and control you by way of so-called regulation and legislation, and confiscate what you produce by way of taxation. Whoever wins, you will be extorted and dominated. When you vote, whether you win or not, you are accepting that someone else has the right to rule you. You are conceding the state's authority over you. You are agreeing that you are going to be someone's slave, with the only question being which political master will own you. If you believe that you have an obligation to pay taxes, if you concede that it is up to someone else to decide how much of your earnings they will let you keep, then you are their slave. If you own yourself, you don't need the permission of anyone, any individual, any group, any collective, any country, any legislature, to run your own life, make your own choices, and keep the fruits of your own labor. As long as the politicians see you voting, petitioning, protesting, and campaigning, begging for tax cuts, whining for different legislation, as long as they see you timidly obeying whatever commands they issue while begging them to change their so-called laws, then they know that they own you in mind and body. Writing or calling your congressman merely tells him that you still think he's important, that you still view him and his fellow parasites as authority, and that you still think it's his choice whether to let you be free or not. As long as you play their games and legitimize their system, obeying their so-called laws and paying their so-called taxes, acting as if they are your rightful lords and masters, the tyrants know they have nothing to fear. The slave master doesn't mind his slaves pitifully begging for mercy, as long as they keep obeying and keep producing wealth for the master to steal. Those in power aren't worried about elections or petitions. What they do fear is that one day their victims will realize the truth, will stop believing in the divine right of politicians, will stop calling liars and crooks lawmakers, will stop calling the tyrants, mercenaries, law enforcers, will stop believing that anyone has the right to rule them, will stop imagining authority where there is none, will realize that they own themselves, and will stop bowing to the parasitical, anti-human beast called government. If you own your time and effort, and the fruits of your labor, then stop asking nicely to be allowed to keep it. If you own yourself, then stop asking nicely for legislative permission to run your own life. If you actually believe in unalienable rights, in individual liberty, in freedom, then stop asking nicely for the sociopathic parasites to let you be free. For humanity to be free, people need to stop thinking, talking, and acting like slaves. Stop bowing to megalomaniacs. Stop paying tribute to sociopaths. Stop obeying political parasites. If you truly understand that you own yourself, then start acting like it.